Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As usual, we are here at your drive time show here on Eagle FM, your favorite duo keeping you company as usual from 4 o'clock. That's until the hour of six, one topic at a time. So today is Wednesday, right?
Yeah. I also got sort of like sidetracked by the time frame. I technically thought we're still stuck on Tuesday, but it's today, Wednesday. Yeah.
So it wasn't just me, because I woke up thinking, okay, now today is Tuesday, and then I looked at my calendar. And
I don't know what today does. Okay, it's also because I saw an invite earlier today that said 11 June Wednesday, and I had to ask David, what's today's date? Is it not the 10th? He said yes, and then I realized, okay, so these people probably just miss. You know, they just misaligned their days in
Someone
the week
lost their
with their times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, on today's home run, we are going to talk about my favorite thing, and that is food. So, GMOs and the regulations that's being applied on, on the genetically modified products, basically, especially in relations to things that we consume. The legislation is being revamped, is being, you know, updated, and that's what we are going to be talking about here today. And if you are one of the regular Eagle FM listeners, and you also do read the our e-paper that is the Villager, then you must have seen your Monday article on the subject.
Yeah,
on the regulations that's being.
This Monday. I think it was last Monday.
Last Monday.
Yeah.
Wait. The 8th was last Monday.
Or was it this Monday?
Jeez. Oh, no, it was this Monday.
Yeah, this Monday. Yeah.
So, this Monday, where you sort of like, extensively basically went in to sort of like put it out there for our readers about, the updates that's being carried out, on the Biosafety Act, of 2006, and that's from NCRST and the line ministries that are concerned with basically with that piece of legislation, like your environment and agriculture, for example. One of dilemma actually being observed in the world of adoption of genetically modified products is also climate change and its impact on agriculture and food security. Yeah, which is also putting a lot of confusion, especially in relations to, to regulations. You can't say absolutely no, and you can't say absolutely yes. So now you have a lot of regulatory middle ground to do in terms of implementation. And the first thing that obviously brings, came to my mind when I came across that, when we basically decide, when we weren't busy deciding on what topic to discuss for today, and when that topic came out, the first thing that came in my head was the case that we talked about, was that last year, about the US and Mexico.
Yeah, about the dispute around the maize.
Yeah.
The GMO maize that the Americans want to dominate in terms of exporting to the Mexicans, and the Mexicans, which was basically based upon Mexican traditional traditional agricultural knowledge about the maize variants, which was a very interesting conversation. Firstly, you actually give me an idea now, Helmut, because I think I have to go talk to those people again and ask them, hey, listen, what happened to these particular updates and these particular talking points? Because it is literally through the Namibian Nature Foundation that I was introduced to that subject matter. So I'll go and ask them what's going on. Because obviously the discussion on what was that subject matter? The one about organic farming. That was all under the organic farming, theme.
Yeah.
Because organic farming, is obviously, okay, in the Namibian context, it might have gone a little bit quiet, but organic farming is obviously one of the major concerns heading towards the future, because the lady from the World Oceans Day, the director for I think it's marine ecosystems at the Ministry of Agriculture, Forest, Agriculture and Fisheries, that being Madam Graça de Almeida, she herself highlighted one of the biggest problems specifically is the plastic pollution and also that plastic pollution leads to microplastics being circulated throughout the ocean currents. And if you catch a fish or you eat a fish, unfortunately, that had consumed too much of those microplastics, you get polluted yourself specifically in one way or another by these microplastics. And there's a lovely, I still want to get that thing also from another resource about the discussion of microplastics.
Oh, that's one interesting discussion, especially when it comes to...
No, it really is, Howard, because this was even presented, where's my phone? This was presented at a, I think it was an EU level or at a UN level, but this is like a collection of scientists that got together talking about this discussion specifically. Now, I know we're slightly sidetracking from the GMO talk, but microplastics obviously come from the same particular sector, the same particular industrial practice, which is literally the ability to manufacture things out of a recipe, basically. That's what it is. And when we look at the GMO scenario of things, yes, the first thing that pops up is that the GMO maize that the Americans want to export to Mexico, but that some Mexican stakeholders, academics and farmers and small-scale farmers are trying to, you know, sort of like to resist this particular discussion.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This is a confusing one, and I think the discussion around GMOs is going to quickly resemble the discussion around pretty much everything artificial that's being slowly implemented, and partly or wholly artificial being implemented in the food system.
Yeah.
And because we are talking about because I think we are kicking up the GMO discussion, because for a very long time, especially in the food industry, GMO was the major discussion. There are some that were against the idea of genetically modifying seeds for agricultural, especially commercial or more like large scale use.
Yeah.
And there are those that were for the idea, looking at GMO as one of those, a scientific breakthrough that, human beings basically come up with to make agriculture more efficient. But the thing is, we are now, from the look of things, shifting. We have moved a step further from genetically modifying food products or food produce to making everything straight up in the lab, which is now the discussion around. Take for example right now about lab-grown meat and lab-made chocolate. That I think is a step, it's a step above genetic modification. One of the most interesting point to make and actually talk about in relations to a GMO that's being pointed out, especially by proponents of genetic modification, especially with regards to agricultural produce, is you can tailor then the seed of that particular crop to survive in harsh environments. And that is now becomes one of those discussions that is interesting to have in lines with in line with the climate change. And we are a semi-arid country, so that conversation becomes even more interesting for us to have, because we want to, food security is one of the goals that we would like to achieve. And we don't have a lot of rainfall because we're a semi-arid country.
Yeah.
So any solution that can help us navigate all the challenges that face Namibia's agriculture sector would come in very handy. But the question that then comes is genetic modification one of those discussions? Which all these subjects, if you just to put it out there in terms of consultation, is most likely going to boil down to secular reasoning. You are most likely going to find a lot of people that are divided into mainly just three main camps, as you would in any on any subject.
Yeah.
Those that those that don't care about which side is right and which side is wrong, and one will say, that's a bad idea, and the other saying, okay, yeah, well, that's a good idea.
Mm.
So. seeing that we are a semi-arid country and we, you know, food security is one of those goals that we would like to achieve. And being a semi-arid country, that means our agricultural sector needs a lot of hoops to jump through for us to achieve the goal of food security.
Yeah.
That then brings up the question of could a genetic modification be one of those solutions? And I'm not saying it's going to be one of those solutions. Hence, now all these things comes back to whether we are going to adopt it, the technology on a larger scale, because we import about 60% of our food. Whether we're going to adopt it or how much of it we are going to adopt, if we are going to adopt any of it, is going to boil down to the regulations that we have in place. That's where the upgrade now of the Biosafety Act comes in, especially as it relates to genetically modified organisms.
The obvious concern in the Namibian context, dear listeners, just to give you an update, but you will obviously hear it in the conversation with Mr. Mungay. So if you've seen our poster, I did a short interview with Mr. Paulus Mungay, who is from the NCRST, specifically that he's the general manager for that's innovation and technology development within the commission. And the conversation is one that obviously is based upon the review process. Now, currently what is happening, just so that you know, the Biosafety Act is 20 years old, just to let you know.
I can't believe it took 10 years to implement.
Look, I didn't want to laugh. I had to keep a serious face, Helmut, because I knew you technically would have laughed. If you were sitting next to me and if we technically had this interview, you know, a little bit earlier in this week.
Then that's a terrible idea.
Yeah. So, but it's actually also that it's the same thing with the Water Act. The Water Act that was in that report of the uranium. Because the Water Act was technically also like dormant.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what is the legal word, but it was, I would like to know in a Namibian context. I've now observed what the EU has done. The EU, they announced, what's that act that they brought in last year? Is it data sharing or something data? And then there's another one on AI functionalities. I wrote the article last year. I just have to check which article it is. And the important thing is specifically that if you go and read up what the EU does, firstly, they have stakeholder engagement in the EU Parliament. Mm-hmm. So that takes place 4 years ago from now. Then they place for themselves a timetable, Helmut, a deadline that says, okay, let's draft something so long in the meantime that technically meets all the needs of all member nations in the EU. Then it gets drafted. Then everybody looks at it. Everybody makes sure that the thing doesn't clash with anything, with any legal statutes in the EU context. Mm-hmm. And then if everything looks good from what has been reviewed, what has been checked up, what has been added and omitted or subtracted, then they announce it to the rest of the economy. Hey, there is this particular new legal thing that will come in. Mm-hmm. We are now sensitizing you. Now they will tell you this document has technically been accepted by the EU lawmakers. And by next year, this date, this document comes into force. So please come and tell us now about hesitations, doubts, concerns, approvals, acceptances that you might have, you, the broader public and the economy. Mm-hmm. Come tell us now. Before this thing becomes solid rock law next year. In Namibia, we gazette things and the thing is for 10 years dormant. For 10 years.
Okay, here's the thing. First of all, we have let me just call it a very terrible culture of sitting on pieces of legislation.
Yeah.
And it basically takes forever. And that's one of those things that was pointed out in that discussion, which you also referenced in your article, that when it comes to technological advancement, 10 years equals a century. Because by the time that you've
gotten... decade.
No, I mean,
or are you purposefully using century?
Yeah, because if you look at the speed with which technology advances,
yeah,
by the time that a 10-year period, how much technology have advanced in that period?
I mean, even just if you think about the smartphone technology,
yeah,
since 2000,
yeah, just use that as an example. Since 10-year period,
since 2008 to 2018, Helmut, there was a smartphone I had that was the size that was this thick,
That's a smartphone.
That was a smartphone. And I still remember one girl telling me, wow, what a brick. That was like, I almost threw you with this thing. And she said, well, you know what? The thing looks brickish. But that's still when that 08, 09 up to 2015 realm was when the Android phones and Nokia were trying to find out who should become the actual competition for iPhone against iPhone. Because the iPhone guys were happy. Their thing was refined from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because what GMO also tries to do is, the realm of GMO production technically tries to refine, how the crop gets from the plantation or from the what's that thing that vegetables are sometimes grow, the patch, let me call it the patch, gets from the patch to your plate.
Yeah.
Is also a dimension of looking at what happens in the other consumer products. For example, you know where your smartphone comes from. It's a bunch of components
that you just put together.
You know where your car comes from. It's a bunch of component parts put together. You know that your shirt, your trouser, your shoe, your whatever is literally a one-stop shop factory that knows how to make this particular product. And that's ultimately what we are seeing specifically, that the agro processing and the industrial, using them as obviously American terms, the industrial agricultural complex wishes to achieve. You know, just literally from the patch or the plantation to your plate. And you're not supposed to know what's going on in between. I'll just let it end there.
You know, when it comes to GMO, one of the biggest discussion that is more often had, whether for or against, is the impact that it has on the human body, because this whole thing all boils down to consumption.
Yeah.
But, I'm looking at this as a very interesting conversation to have, because natural food, even if it's not genetically modified, if you're allergic to it, it's going to give you health issues. Mm. So that means a food genetically modified or natural is going to have its own problems.
Mm.
So that's what makes the conversation very interesting to have in terms of the negative and positives. But now the thing is, when you're looking at the scale of the problems that are caused, there's one thing that I just realized about peanuts. I believe in the early 2000s, the American health sector preached this whole idea of keep your kids away from peanuts.
Yeah.
And then they realized, just 5-10 years down the line that, okay, first of all, parents were practicing what they were being preached to by a lot of professionals in the health sector to keep their kids away from, from peanuts and peanuts products.
Mm.
But then they realized something that was very interesting, that the more they preached the idea of keep your kids from peanuts, the more peanut allergies went through the roof. Then they realized that one of the unintended consequences of the whole, of keeping kids away from, away from peanuts is they created an environment that did not have, that did not have any defense mechanism to peanuts, whether the product itself or the fungus that grows on the product. So that's what caused most of the allergies. And I remember Anthony Fauci, I think, was your go-to, medical advisor on everything COVID-19. He basically admitted that maybe preaching the whole idea of keeping people away from peanuts was a terrible idea. It was a terrible idea, because then they realized that your immune system needs practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, for it to be prepared for something. I'm not saying commit suicide with peanuts.
If you know you're allergic, please, guys.
Please stay out from peanuts. And you may also want to stay away from Helmut. And now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And also Dwight.
Jeez.
Because I like peanut butter as well. But yeah, I don't eat peanut butter like I eat the peanuts. I eat peanut butter.
Oh, no. Yeah, like roasted peanuts is just top notch.
That's actually a good idea now, the roasted peanut
thing. Yeah.
And I still want to know who is the person that sells you the roasted peanut sandwich, because I don't find them.
Well, the thing is, you buy yours in the shop. I buy mine outside.
No, when you send me to the same person, I don't find the person.
No, there's this wonderful, you know, just a meme in one giant umbrella, which is basically everyone, you know, at that place.
Basically, yeah. That's everybody.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And even when I go ask them, where's the peanuts, they look at each other like, what? Who's got peanuts?
See, that's where knowing a guy who knows a guy comes in handy. You need connection even for peanuts.
I mean, if it's, look.
Now, sometimes if you go there in the afternoon, they may not be there because there are a lot of people that eats them.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I come in the afternoon, I don't find them there.
Yeah.
But, you are most likely to find them there in the, in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, in the afternoon, it's also France. He also eats a bunch of them. But the thing is...
Are you sure France doesn't repossess you of your own particular sort of like...
Yeah, when I come here with them... When I come here with them and he's here,
yeah,
that's his first, you know... before he greets me, he's asking for them. Now, back to the whole genetic modification discussion.
Yeah.
There are two main discussions that pops out of this that basically makes the whole regulation of genetically modified products as part of the biosafety regulations very interesting. Not just the observed negative impact to the to human anatomy coming out of the products, but also how it overall impacts agriculture. You're talking about something that that will basically has a lot of chances of becoming mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, take your bananas for example. For a very long time, I thought bananas were naturally seedless.
Yep.
It turns out bananas naturally in the wild have seeds, and I've never actually seen one, and I can't imagine eating a banana that has seeds.
It's also the size of the mangoes. You know those mangoes that grow wild from Zambezi region into southern Zambia?
Basically into Zambia.
Yeah, into southern Zambia.
Yeah.
You wouldn't realize, because the tree grows so wild there, you'd be thinking this is just an abnormal tree with an, abnormally large fruit that just stinks up the whole place there in Livingston, as a tourist walking around there on the sidewalk.
Mm.
Until you realize when you like what happened with me, I accidentally stepped on one that was like overripe lying on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, but this looks like a mango. The mango pip, the massive seed,
mm-hmm.
the seed pod.
Yeah.
This is a mango, just not as hairy. The hairs are about this short.
On the natural one?
On the natural one versus the one that we see in the shops. And the one in the shops is way bigger.
Yeah, the one that just covers every gap in between your teeth.
And it basically looks like a rugby ball, the one that you buy in the shop versus this natural one that just grows there.
Eat two, three of those mangoes and you smile. Someone will think you have Brazilian hair in between your teeth. Now, to the audio.
To the audio, we introduce my conversation with Dr. Paulus Mungay. From the NCRST, and we have this particular conversation regarding the review process that is still undergoing or still in the pipeline with regards to updating the Biosafety Act of 2006.
Which will also bring about the implementation of a Biosafety Council?
No, the Safety Council is still there. There is a Safety Council currently.
But, that's a good thing.
But it helps to also define the newer roles that probably expand
the mandate
because we have to identify Namibia. We have to know what we're importing as well at one or other stage. Yeah. I mean, if you could see on a grand scale the tariff debate just on eggs, US eggs, US beef, US dairy products, and the EU and the UK are like, nah, brah, we don't want your stuff.
Yeah, no.
We don't want, we can see where your cattle are going. But because you guys mix your cattle herds for, you know, for red meat supply in the world and in the US, they buy Mexican cattle, which they don't know who is auditing the standards and the quality of Mexican cattle. So the Mexican cattle get mixed into the US cattle population. And now, because that it's almost the same thing with like Namibian copper and Zambian copper.
Mm.
We know Zambia produces copper. Namibia also produces copper. But the Zambian copper drives through Namibia. And if you go look at the copper statistics, like say the trade, the most traded products that Namibia has for like a month from the NSA, then you see this massive copper.
You know, like okay,
quantity that was traded.
Where did this come from?
Is this our copper or is it Zambia?
Don't come in from Zambia. To the audio.
Mr. McGain, thank you for taking the time to talk to us here at Eagle FM regarding the questions, obviously, about genetically modified products, specifically in the Namibian landscape. Since it's just two questions that I just want to look into, the first one being that there was a review process that NCRSD, you can help me on the correction on the time period, but there was a review process that happened last year, and just to try and follow up on that, at what stage is the review process currently into 2026? And what are the perceived or the planned or the potential impacts that could be looked into? And I'm talking now from economic and down to, you know, the impacts also that the review process wishes to institute.
Thank you for having me again and good morning. As you are aware that the NCRST, which is the National Commission on Research, Science and Technology, is responsible to implement the Biosafety Act number 7 of 2006. That's really deal with ensuring the safe handling, transfer of activities, any activities involving the development or the use, safe use of genetically modified organisms. Meaning that this is either organisms or products that may be derived through the process of genetic engineering or biotechnology processes. Now, as you are aware that this Biosafety Act was enacted in 2006 and its regulation came into force, or it was just developed in 2016, meaning that there are 10-year gap in between. And during these processes, one may also aware that, or maybe known that, technology, you know, especially in plant biotechnology and animal biotechnology, accelerates because of various global challenges, meaning climate change and all other those factors. Meaning that manufacturers or producers of this technology want to address climatic challenges, meaning they want to have organisms or plants that are adapting to climate change and also associated environmental conditions. Now, this product, when they are developed, obviously they are safe use. No one really knows the safety, and you may be also aware perhaps that the GMO development processes in the past had its own, you know, backlashes from the public in terms of its safety. Now, as a country, Namibia realized that obviously we want also to ensure that we have food security in a country. We want to have food in a table, but as a country which is a semi-arid, it also having challenges of climate change, and we also want to accelerate the production of food. However, seeds that are buying may also be containing genetically modified, even their product that we are importing, meaning that you are aware, it's a very known fact that Namibia imports close to 60 or 70% of their food product from countries outside Namibia, meaning that these products may be made from plants or animals, if one may put it, that may also be modified. Now, their safety in a country before they get imported, it must be ensured. What we did as a country now, the regulation and the act has undergone rigorous revision because we found out during the implementation from the 2014 when we have implemented the bus safety regulation, when the regulation were passed, we have implemented them and we find a lot of gaps related to the implementations. And as a country, under the custodian, our custodian ministry, which is the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Sport, Youth and Culture, look at or have delegated NCRST to do then the revision of the act. And this act started sometimes, I think 3 years back, meaning that we started identifying gaps, that what do we have those gaps, what are those gaps that we have in the regulations. And we also have consulted the key agencies or ministries that may be impacted or somehow involved in the implementation of this act. For example, the Minister of Agriculture that deals with agricultural products and importation, for example, of horticultural product, the phytosanitary issues. And the Minister of Environment that is responsible for environmental risk assessments, including the genetically modified organisms, and NAMRA, and the Ministry of the Agronomic Board, Namibia Agronomic Board, and other key agencies. So to ensure that then if we are to change or to incorporate those gaps that are changed, how are they going to be, for example, be impacted, including those ministries? And we started, as I said, 3 years back. And of course, well, the regulations and the act, national laws, well, when they are being revised or developed nationwide, have to be consulted in line with the National Planning Commission guidelines, meaning that we also did regional consultations to ensure general public, including farmers and all users of this act, that this act, these gaps, identify the gaps and proposed change to the act are correct and acceptable to the country at large. And this was done last year between June and August. However, you also be aware that once then those changes, once you did your consultations, you are required also to have a final validation workshop of the acts. And once then that was done this year at the beginning, in I think it's February, in 24th February, to ensure that for the validation, to ensure that then all stakeholders must ensure that what they have proposed or advised to be added or to be removed from the act have been incorporated as such. And this was done then in February. However, as you also be, you may also be aware that we, this act will only be approved by cabinet. We also take a step whereby we did the consultations with our legislators, the parliamentarian standing committees on natural resources, that also deal with the debate on the act, whether this act of national interest, whether this incorporation changes can make economic impacts, for example, in the country, or is going to delay, for example, the trading issues and other possible impact of socio-economic development. So we consulted also the parliamentarian standing committees to ensure and inform that this act is to be changed, so that once it's more of an awareness and also inform them what is this law all about. But it's also a way to assist that once then it gets to the cabinet, at least our parliamentarians that are of legislate, looking at the legislations, are well informed in this act. So we completed these processes, maybe just to brief or to put it in a nutshell, that we are submitting now this draft law to mother ministry, which is Ministry of Education again. And they take it through the processes, of course, as much as the draftings or this revision was done by our lawyers in the institutions. The Minister of Justice is the custodian to ensure that the legal act or the law is of sound nature, meaning that the minister will submit it to the legal drafters to ensure that it's well drafted before it's submitted and to cabinet for discussion and possible approvals.
Mr. Mugay, thanks for that timeline that you laid out there for us. If you'll allow me, can I sort of like be a little bit how do they say, you know, be a little bit sort of like jumping the queue? But is there any positive developments for that contained in that draft that obviously still has to go for approval? You don't have to say which specific ones, because obviously there's still some steps regarding the further deliberations that have to take place regarding the drafting. But is this for the better, or is this for example, the agricultural sector or for environmental management? I just wanted to get in terms of which particular direction would that draft nudge towards? Because obviously the bigger threat that Namibia faces is climate change. And, you know, there's once again some sort of an advisory from the UN about an El Nino that the whole world has to look out for, that could possibly see the world experiencing the hottest year since 2024. So I just wanted to understand, will the draft lean towards a climate change sort of like approach, or to an agricultural food security approach?
Well, that's really a great question. But I want to highlight that about safety act, it means that enabling the safe use. It means that any technology that is coming with regarding to food and associated food product that may be derived from genetically modified organisms, we must ensure safety to human, must ensure safety to animals, and must also ensure safety to environment. And any research activities also that is taking place must be done in such nature that it protects the environment. It must also ensure that there's no impact that is going to the environment. So socio-economic development, in my understanding, it means that you must use now any modern technology, taking into account precautionary measures that anything that you are using should be safe.
Yeah.
But you must now able to address all possible challenges, for example, environmental climatic conditions, climate change that we have just highlighted.
Yeah.
I want to highlight very few things that what are the some of those possible changes that we proposed for to be incorporated in the Act? The challenge that we had in a past during the implementation of this Act, we realized that seed in general were not inclusively regulated in the Act. We also realized that now there's new breeding techniques. In technology, in biotechnology, you can change, insert a gene, and also you can remove a gene of interest to address different climatic conditions. And these new techniques, as technology goes, new techniques, for example, the gene editing, where you can delete the gene of interest, are new technologies that are developed. And we realize that through the definition of GMOs, then it was one also the critical issue that must be discussed and incorporated, taking into account, of course, our national interests in line with socioeconomic development, meaning that the new definition for genetical organisms may change based, and these changes are based on what other countries are doing, best practices, and what, of course, our country wants. It's not a preventative one. and also it's not a pro. It's a general to allow the safe uses, I'm writing. Mm. The second one is also ensuring the labeling. You may also, in our regulation, also add different labeling categories.
Yeah.
But then we also want to ensure that any food or feed products that is getting into the country must clearly be labeled. The labeling was already there, but for feed and food products, there's few modifications that we thought are very vital to ensure the smooth implementation of the Act. As we speak, I think they also have been, we have a lean structure in terms of the authority, in terms of the implementation of the Act, but we also propose different modifications to ensure that personnel that are doing the monitoring of genetically modified organisms, at least general, also ensuring that each agencies and ministries that involved are implementing laws with regarding to GMOs or plants and animals are also well versed, because when importers are importing their products, you can also ensure that there's a lot of cumbersome processes getting involved. You go to the customs, which is NAMRA, you go to the Ministry of Agriculture, you go to Agronomic Board, all these processes. So we have included, or we made some proposals in the Act that those agencies that are involved, they are well versed, because we also want to ensure that this implementation is done, you know, involving all other agencies. We want to remove this, you know, silos of working to reduce, so that because we want to increase our efficiency, that importers, anyone who is using this product, is not frustrated by the processes, but is also using the law with a smooth implementation. So those are some of the main proposals that we made. Risk assessments and environmental impact assessments are also catered or improved, proposed improved to ensure that all ministries are involved. We made proposals that we have challenged, for example, for accessing to different facilities, including farms, but we also include those other agencies like police that when we want, for example, to get to the farm, we do not have some of the backlashes that the inspectors are experiencing. So those are my, some of the key proposals that we made, and we hope that throughout these processes, this proposal change will be acceptable before they get approved by cabinet.
And then you already ventured a lot into the seeds discussion, specifically about the second question I had about the seed legislation that was also under review back in 2024. I remember that specific engagement, Mr. Mungai, because the council itself, the biosafety council, also had to sort of like highlight what some of the professors from the universities in Namibia had to contribute as well, and also obviously the other stakeholders like the farmers and some processors. If we look at that particular review that took place in 2024, is that also contained within what you just explained now in terms of the further measures, some of the additions in the drafting that had to go to cabinet and also to the lead ministry, MASAC? Is it also contained within some of those particular proposals that you guys made?
Yeah, I think maybe let me just also dwell a bit into the previous question of saying, is this change going to affect or how are they going to impact our socio-economic development? Yeah. I think the NDP6 have highlighted that, we want to ensure that plants and animal production is being done, of course, and they must also be very adaptable to our environmental conditions. And this is only done through biotechnology. And most biotechnology processes, and we cannot shy away, of course, from the use of genetically modified organisms. The issue is Once you are doing that, you must ensure that every process in the development or the use is safe for the environment, as I have highlighted, and also to human and animals, meaning that the usage must be socioeconomic, must answer or must be able to contribute for socioeconomic development, but it must also ensure the safety, either through our research and also through when you are doing the importing of these products.
Yeah.
Now, your last question is with related down to seeds.
Yeah.
The seed bill is, I think, is with the Ministry of Agriculture. It's not our responsibility. But for our side, we are responsible to ensure that if a farmer want to use a seed that is genetically modified, they must address all requirements of the regulations in a, and it must also be acceptable, because it also goes any seed, the genetically modified organisms, anyone who want to plant seed for research or for planting for commercial purposes, it means that they have to have an environmental release or planting permit. And those permits must adhere to all requirements of the regulations. And these are the proposals that we have made in terms of now of the Act, and they are very critical. And we realize that if this is not included, we may have, you know, farmers that may be importing illegally.
Yeah.
Although they still have a way of importing legally by following the due processes. But as I said, the processes must also be very acceptable and must be smooth enough not to stress farmers, that to a certain extent, or at most, want to address national food security.
100%, 100%. Yeah. Just a final question on that, on as an extension to the seed regulation or the seed legislation discussion, Mr. Munge, I just want you to confirm whether or not will that seed bill by the Ministry of Agriculture also include, or will it encompass, or will it also house the Biosafety Act within it, or will it still stand alone from the Biosafety Act but just referencing the Biosafety Act as well? What do you know about that technicality?
I will not be very well enough to answer as a lawyer, because I'm not a lawyer. But what I have seen is, in many laws, is this, that there is always that once you have a seed deal, if you have the law is passed, it means that it will not, or it's not superseding other existing laws. Meaning that if there is a requirement that once you are importing your seeds, they meet, for example, the phytosanitary, it means that they must not contain pests and diseases. Through other acts, they should also adhere to any other existing laws, including the Biosafety Act, that deals with the genetically modified organisms. And that is also what we said in the law in the Biosafety Act, that once we are implementing, for example, if we are regulating seeds from our end, only in the context of genetically modified organisms, it does not mean that we stop other implementations of regulation of seeds with related to other activities, maybe phytosanitary issues or any other requirements as may deemed fit by other laws. That's why we made the ministry that when we're importing the seeds, or we want to evaluate the applications with regarding to the use of GMO seeds, one of the key critical ministry that must provide input before the decision is made is the Minister of Agriculture, for that particular purpose, because they are dealing with the seed bill or seed law or any other seed requirements, meaning that we cannot make a decision without them providing the input. The same thing goes to the Minister of Environment, meaning that if we have, we're importing seeds, and the Environmental Act of 2007 highlights that any activity that have to be dealt with must have environmental clearing certificate, for example. It means that the Ministry of Environment must provide thorough inputs on applications before the decision is, before the recommendation is made by the minister to make, to issue or decline a permit for this activity to take place. Meaning that it, we also made them as a key requirement. In the past, our act did not say please consult. We only did it practical because we realized that there are so other laws that may be impacting our decisions.
Yeah.
But we have provided this input that the agencies in this and the ministries must provide their input because before the decision is made, and that is now some of the changes that we made in AI. And I have to assume that also in a seed bill, they also said if maybe you are importing, you must adhere to any other laws of the countries.
Yeah.
Taking into account genetically modified organisms.
100%, 100%. Mr. Mugay, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners just on shedding some light in terms of these developments that we might have forgotten, but we just, you know, need to resuscitate those memory banks in terms of developments that did happen and where we find them today in 2026. Thank you once again.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and we continue now from that audio. Now, the dilemma here is very easy. You know, that's one of the things that was basically pointed out in the audio that you just listened to, is the technology has its potentials in terms of helping more like improving agricultural output.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which helps like combat things like food security, food insecurity.
Yeah.
But the thing is, first of all, like any technology, you know, regulation is central to it, to make sure that you don't deal with the, you know, with whatever backlash Mother Nature has in store. There's one gentleman I follow on TikTok who talks, who goes by the name, was this, hormone specialist or something. Yeah. He was he made a video one day when he was talking about how companies like Mars are using some newly new gene editing method known as CRISPR or something.
Mm.
Now that method is one of those more like new breakthroughs that are proving efficient in terms of genetic modification. But the point he made was, which I found very interesting, was that this now have to be done in a very careful way, because if you look at it from a natural perspective, gene editing, if you look at evolution, it's low for a reason. You want to filter out all the faults,
and obviously the price tags, the other thing. It yes, it sounds like a sci-fi movie, guys.
It really does.
But it actually is a development that came through just after COVID. I was even surprised because we were literally 2022, 2023, still fresh from the COVID pandemic's impacts on the global economy. And I think CRISPR was refined? Was it in Silicon Valley or was it in China? Because in China, they were trying to see to what length they can literally gene edit an embryo for people who can't have kids naturally, which in my case is a bit of a lie. Big fat lie. It's probably someone just, I will just stop there. You know, I will be peaceful right there.
Okay, we have a commercial break coming up. I had a very interesting question, but I may ask it on the other side with break if you just tuned in. You're still listening to A Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, as always here until the hour of 6. And today's discussion is the Biosafety Act that is undergoing, an upgrade.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's looking at, among other things, genetically modified organisms in Namibia's food industry, since we import most of our food. But more on that on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. So let's dive into this whole GMO discussion now. Now, one of the biggest issue I think that also makes a regulation of GMO very important is again taking us back to the U.S. and Mexico, U.S. and Mexico case that we talked about last year. And Mexico. One of the argument that the Mexicans were saying was, "We need seed variety."
Mm.
Yeah, we need seed variety, which is something that's already present in our culture. But that seed variety market is being trampled over by large corporations that are, using, one most likely genetically modified product to basically dominate the market.
Yeah.
Another interesting argument that also brings a serious spotlight on GMO was the health concerns that they pointed out emanating from a genetically modified product coming out of the U.S. market. And now that's also one of those things, and obesity is one of those things that was also referenced in that discussion, which means every time that we now have a GMO discussion, the health discussion is obviously going to start dominating this environment. But one that I feel like one topic that's not had enough in the GMO discussion, it is especially when it comes to its universal use, is first of all, GMO, you are talking about high end equipments being used by specialists to genetically modify seeds. Since you can't patent something that's natural, that means something that's genetically modified is obviously going to come with a lot of intellectual properties attached to it, which now brings up a whole different discussion on where this product is adopted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you have to follow through the channels of adopting, of acquiring intellectual properties before adopting this product? That's also why, regulation becomes a very interesting discussion, because you don't want Namibian farmers, both large and small scale, to wake up one day and find themselves with piles of litigation cases by a private company coming from China, Russia, or the US, claiming that the product that they have in their farm is a genetically product that they spend billions of dollars refining, and therefore they have to pay. Because unfortunately, this is the case already in the US.
It's It's also a particular thing specifically in countries like Namibia that obviously now want to expand further the agro-processing capabilities of let's say their own particular food industrial complex. There is one company close by. They are doing their own particular cool drinks. I would perceive it as some dairy mix products. Mm-hmm. But when you look at agro-processing, Hamoud, usually a discussion is based upon what is the level of nutritional value you wish to give a customer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not the ultimate question in the commercial sense, being that you are just selling food for foods, you know, you're trying obviously making your money back. But in some cases, we're not, you know, also talking about the nutritional value that you wish to get. Another dimension is also one based upon the particular growing need by increasing populations and what the agricultural sector can provide. Now, remember, the Europeans are already experimenting with lab-grown meat,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that they don't have technically in future import from countries like Namibia, Brazil, Argentina, Australia. Those are the large meat exporting countries of the world.
You know, when you put it that way, you scare the Moses out of Namibians. So we're like, hey, we're here trying to figure our way out of the whole Lebme diamond conundrum.
Yeah.
Now we are looking at one of our largest meat market, trying to figure out a way to basically produce what we sell them in the lab.
Yeah, Helmut, that's one of the downsides of Europe, who's technically... what's that thing in political science? Client states.
Mm-hmm.
These are countries around the world in the global economy who are happy to just import. Your people must make everything. Now, obviously, with some of the dimensions that obviously take place in the broader scheme of things, specifically based on where the future of food is going to, we've obviously got South Africa to the south, Africa in the 54, you know, with its 54 member states. We're obviously trying to find our growing pains in terms of what we can export to each other. And I actually believe there's a great, if you look at it, what Namibia can export, there's a great potential for a country like Namibia to technically convert. When the Europeans do their thing with lab-made meat, there's also a potential for Namibia basically to sell that red meat into the African continent. But it also doesn't mean that the other African countries don't have their own standards on food, food safety,
mm-hmm.
don't have their own standards on the kinds of seeds or the kinds of already produced food items coming into their nations. But obviously, much of the strength lies behind the three SACU guys, Namibia, Botswana, South Africa.
Yeah.
South Africa, Helmut, has the capability to maintain their entry into the AFC-FTA realm. Countries like Namibia and Botswana, we have to take things slow. Now, we obviously can't go and sell diamonds first off as hoping that, you know what, let the North Africans buy this. You can't, because the North Africans, they go and shop. If you could sometimes see where they go and shop in the Middle East, in the Arab countries like UAE, Qatar, Bahrain,
mm-hmm.
Kuwait, Saudi Arabia. So there's an established market for those guys. And they're also pretty very close to Southern Europe, because, I mean, Hamoud, the documentary I watched the other day about how the Tunisian president in that documentary became basically a one-man authoritarian control thing, and he's basically a former academic, a former lecturer at one of Tunisia's universities. All the people in that interview were interviewed in French. So now you also need to understand the proximity of the North Africans to Southern Europe. You know, the level of disposable income and the level of exposure they have to certain markets. There's that gravitational, commercial gravitational pull. Now, a country like Mexico is unfortunately right next door to the US with that maize discussion. When you come to the AFCFTA component of things, the Biosafety Act is technically internally for Namibia to sort out Namibia's own particular concerns regarding food safety, and obviously what spillover effects potentially some kind of a seed has on the bee, the natural bee population of Namibia.
Yeah.
Because if that bee population decides to pull nectar from a plant that has a flower and the plant is genetically modified, that means it also transfers to the honey, which is the other natural product in the process, in the natural food. What was that other word? Food systems, in the food system of nature.
Yeah.
Now, the aim, obviously, is that countries like Namibia needs to try and beat things like climate change. And in some cases, we obviously need to find our own research and development, specifically in developing our own, harsh climate resistant crops. I remember back in the 60s or the 70s, Mexico was one of the first countries that they tested GM genetically modified crops on. It was one of the first sort of like global South countries that experimented with this GMO product. But we also have to try and understand what will be the impact, because yes, it's wonderful to see an evergreen plantation. Even during your dry months of the year, you also have to ask what's going on with that plant that it doesn't even show a little bit of wilting, even a little bit, just a little bit of brown, a little bit of yellow, even, you know, by the sun. Why is it evergreen? So you then also have to interrogate the question, is this thing using too much water? Is there something that this thing is needing that's probably a heavy investment for said particular farmer at the time? What are the particular goals? And agriculture won't stop here, guys. Agriculture won't just stop here. Agriculture won't wait even on the Biosafety Act still for it to continue. Because even in nature, things are changing themselves or adapting themselves. I mean, coming on, I'm still reading the particular report by the World Meteorological Organization report by the UK. Do you know that they actually, the WMO, they take reports from member nations, who say, hey, listen, we've done this analysis. You can use this report for your own particular announcement as a global organization for the world. And the WMO went and looked at the analysis of the UK Met Office, and they were like, my goodness. So that's where we started hearing of this El Nino later this year that is going to be deemed possibly as, or make this year possibly as the hottest year on record in the world. I just got an email earlier today, specifically also from the local UN office here, specifically about the heat in the US and the World Cup that's currently being hosted there. This is obviously that the US has a weird position itself in the world, because it's one of those countries that have the wonderful weather. They call it moderate or temperate weather. Temperate, yeah. Temperate weather is like you can do most economic activities. You can have rivers and you can have agriculture. You can have what and you can have what and you can... And then there's that one little thing where it, you know, I'm a geologist, but the meteorologist will explain to you, or any other scientist looking at such particular conditions that are good for humans to live in. There's one little feature that's not so good. And this one little feature is usually for the Americans is like the tropical storm. Not tropical storms. What is that thing that they suffer from? Not cyclones. Hurricanes. The Americans get most hurricanes. The Asians get...
tsunami?
No. Tsunami is waves. It's the sea. Cyclones. The Asians get cyclones. And someone else gets...
Wait, what's the difference between a cyclone and a typhoon?
It's a cyclone. Yeah, typhoons. The Asians get cyclones and typhoons. And the Americans get hurricanes.
You know,
but they're basically technically the same thing. They act the same way.
So typhoon, cyclone, tornado, same as a group.
No, tornado is a product in a massive electrical storm.
Uh-huh.
And tornadoes primarily only happen in the U.S.
And a tornado, from my understanding, is basically a wild wind, but much bigger.
Well, it's not a wild wind actually.
The
start of a tornado is not wind.
Uh-huh.
It's technically, yes, it is air.
Yeah.
But it's a reaction of hot air and cold air. There's somewhere. The hot air is rising too quick, and it's creating this vacuum below it, where cold air is coming in. Now it makes.
All the description, rotary movement.
Because I forgot what the description was when I read about, but what happens with tornadoes is the product that you see,
mm-hmm.
even in the movie,
yeah.
is the product at its most violent state.
Yeah.
But how it starts is when there is a lot of hot air rising into the atmospheres, the various levels of the atmosphere, the yeah. overall atmosphere that we have in our Earth. And specifically in that part of North America, the U.S. is the only product or the only hotbed for tornadoes. So if you see what we call here a little bit of a wind twister, uh-huh. a dust twister here in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
a dust twister is literally like the mini-me of that big
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But dust, when have you ever heard of a dust twister becoming the size of that thing like they have in the U.S.
No, and, you know, thank God. And, it's a good thing we don't have tornadoes here because, where I come from, a lot of geology and geography knowledge is needed because every time people see that, yeah, witchcraft, I'm like, guys, it's the weather.
Look, it's sometimes an interesting thing, primarily because, yeah, I know, I'm not sitting here, you know, not being aware of rural communities as well, access the information and all that.
You know, I grew up knowing that, but,
it a secret from your buddies. That's what you did.
Yeah.
You enjoyed their reactions.
Oh, it's really awesome. I look.
Oh, well. You can't be Helmut Columbus, ne? Discovering, look at the natives of my village. Look at their reaction. Look. They don't know it's actually hot air rising, but cold air coming at the bottom.
I think culture and religion are not very different. And in a sense that everything that we can't explain, we sort of like, attribute it to some spiritual or divine nature.
Yeah,
which is why take for example this wind twister, whirlwind, if you can call it that. Mm.
What about a whirlpool in a river?
Oh,
or in the ocean?
Right, well, let's just call it water witchcraft. But the point is,
there's no plug at the bottom. There's no plug.
That's where Mother Nature becomes very fascinating to observe. And if you have, if you just look at, take for example, the human body and how it's coordinated in terms of its functionality, you'll just, you'll be fascinated.
Mm.
There's also one guy I follow on TikTok that just does a lot of AI generated videos on explaining, different parts of a human body and comparing it to the machines that we're able to build today. And one comparison that he made was, the human eye and the most expensive and most advanced camera that we have.
Mm.
Yeah. First of all, the most expensive and most advanced camera doesn't get anywhere near close to the advancement of a human eye. And when you factor in how your eye is compressed with all that high tech, and it's compressed into the size of your eye that can fit in your skull, let alone two of them. It's, the mechanics is unthinkable, and the cohesion with which, the hardware, so which basically your nerves work, the hardware, your nerves and vessels work together with the chemistry and the emotions that basically, makes the whole thing like your eye work, for example.
Yeah.
It's beyond amazing. And you have to understand that everything must be executed in serious, extreme precision.
Yeah.
One thing goes wrong, you have,
You're blind.
You're blind. And, And that's where the whole, you know, genetically modified products now, because you're talking about gene editing, literal gene editing. Your body already does gene editing. They do gene copying constantly. Which is why you look like, you know, which is why you look like your mom or you look like your dad.
Mm.
That's not why you look like your uncle. That's a whole different, that was gene editing practically. But the thing is, if you look at it, one thing that you see is that, gene editing is important to regulate. It's a very important conversation to have because it's a very good scientific breakthrough, one, but it's a very dangerous one if it's not practiced correctly. Because, you know, a correct gene gives you an excellent product.
Yeah.
You know, a wrongly edited gene, you are now talking about what? A cancer is basically a wrong, you know, a genetic fault. And you have this, massive, abnormal multiplication of, of body cells. It's like your printer going haywire.
Mm.
So the regulation then becomes very important. But coming back to the to the seeds, because I like the bee example that he used. Yes, you can genetically modify a product, but you have to understand that things like pollination, when you put the things in the wild, in terms of like mass production, for example.
Yeah.
Well, pollination, that's going to be left out to be left to insects like bees,
and it's something that. You sometimes won't even be able to be, you won't even be awake to police your own plant.
No, you won't.
From not providing nectar to a bee.
Yeah, there's that. And the nectar, you know, the bee and GMO and honey part is just, that's just one aspect of where this whole GMO and agricultural produce discussion becomes interesting. But, it also becomes even more interesting when you look at it in a sense that, you are a farmer. And you have, you have acquired all the legal, documents that allows you to, to farm with an, with a genetically modified, seeds.
Mm.
Now your neighbor wants to stay natural. That's very difficult to regulate because your GMO products are going to end up in your neighbor's, they are going to end up in your neighbor's farm because you are not going to police the bees that will pollinate your crops. The very same animal and insects that will cross pollinate the animals that will do the pollination between your in your farm are the very same insects and birds that will do the pollination in your neighbor's farm. Mm. And at the end of the day, you have signs or more like those genetically modified products showing up or genetically modified products and seeds and crops and produce showing up in your neighbor's farm.
Yeah.
Now, if you have very strict intellectual property if you have very strict intellectual property discussion in association to your products, then your neighbor is going to be like, look, I didn't ask for this and I don't control nature.
Mm.
Which now brings up an interesting discussion about, the longevity and the ability to withstand harsh environments of the, take for example, the genetically modified seeds. So with time, the natural ones, we are basically practicing natural selection here. Except this is not natural selection. The natural one will die out because of the harsh environments. The genetically modified ones will obviously have a high chance of enduring, because first of all, it's being done really fast. The natural ones have the ability to change and endure the environment, but nature's genetic modification is really slow.
Mm.
At the end of the day, you are going to end up with the whole country having one type of maize.
And there is a problem with monoculturalism.
Yeah, and then you will have when you end up with one type of maize and a disease attacks, breaks out.
We've got Ireland.
Exactly. Potato blight.
Potato blight.
Yeah. Potato blight pops up. Now you have the whole country having zero agricultural maize output because they only adopted, you know, because they only prioritized one type of of seed produce that was resistant to all types of insect diseases and environmental factors at the time. So the chance of running into a potato blight blight type of disaster are really high, which is why Mexico's discussion of, you know what, we need seed variety is an excellent idea. And the Kenyan went through that last year. Local farmers went to court to challenge their seed varieties legislation that was being passed that had a clause or a section that made it very difficult, if not borderline impossible, to the point of prosecution if small farmers shared shared seeds.
I think that was also Namibia.
Yeah. So now you have small farmers.
Namibia also had the same thing. A small farmers may not share seeds.
That's just dumb.
If you see my tomatoes prospering, looking nice, and you come and say, "Hey, Dwight, you know the seeds that I bought last year, that was just rubbish.
Yeah.
Can you give me some of the seeds of your?" And then I give you that.
Yeah.
That in itself is a penalizable.
Oh, well.
Offense in some way.
How'd that go?
Well, there were no cases, obviously. But do you hear of cases of people being locked up for a seed? I don't think
so. I mean, the investigations you'll have to carry out to inspect all
the seeds. How big was this plant last year and how big is this plant this year? What was the impact? And then you try to interview the people and the people are like, "Dude, I just got seeds. What is your problem?
What's the big deal?" Yeah.
What's the big deal? Should I not eat? No, you must buy your seeds. You cannot.
That's
you cannot transfer seeds for
you. Yeah, you cannot transfer seeds.
So it seems like there's something similar in the African continent.
In the US, one of the biggest, problem a lot of farmers face, and a lot of them complain about it, is multinational corporations regulating seeds. And they are not required, for the most part, last time I checked, to keep seeds from the previous harvest so they can plant this harvest.
Yeah.
That's cutthroat capitalism.
Meaning the thing that worked for you last year, if you liked version 2.5 of the seed last year, you can't reuse version 2.5 or even, I won't say the word, but, you know, you adulterate with your own mixing as a farmer there on your farm, the seed of this plant and the seed of that plant, and you let the two plants pollinate with each other, and voila, Helmut comes up with his own strain of maize. They won't even allow you to do that.
They won't.
Because they technically took that means away from the farmer, which, remember, was the right to fix discussion.
Ah, yeah.
Because they took that particular angle away from the farmer, primarily, like you were going to explain, basically, to ensure that the farmer continuously stays a customer of the agricultural industrial complex. Now, the farmer, who is supposed to innovate themselves
in their practice,
is technically now being used as sort of like this cash cow that has to buy seeds.
So you constantly have to buy.
Yeah. You constantly have to buy, you constantly need supply contracts and all that stuff. That's also one of the reasons why the Americans are producing so much corn syrup. Because they are producing so much corn, which is the maize. And in many cases, it's the white one that's sometimes sold here in Namibia, the one used for industrial processes. And the sweet corn, which is the lovely yellow one that we all love. Have you ever seen the difference in someone chewing that lovely yellow one that we all like and that white one? The white one looks like the person has to go to warfare. Own hand.
You see, the white one that looks like you are training your jaws to be punched by Mike Tyson.
Basically the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the way some people even eat that white corn is like, they know that it's a mission just to turn their head sideways and just to bite down on something.
Yeah.
Because they know it's hard.
Now, that's the one I like.
You also like it?
The yellow one, not my favorite.
Look, I grew up on the yellow one.
You're right. I grew up on the white one.
But that's the thing. Also about, you know, what is perceived as safe to eat. But both things come from the same, you know, the same nature. It's just somewhere, someone decided to go and play Inspector Gadget with the seed genes somewhere.
Decided to go full MacGyver.
Wherever in the world. Have you realized that no one has made a MacGyver seed, close to a MacGyver seed? Okay, they tried with, is it Scorpion? No, it wasn't Scorpion.
It was Scorpion,
the IT guy.
Yeah.
But no one came close to MacGyver's TV series like, and the best scenario was I watched also once again on YouTube a guy explaining how a TV series never promoted gun culture, which was actually interesting to realize because it was fun. Was probably the only American.
So it is basically just improvising your way out of
improvise, a innovate, be clever, know the knowledge, know which chemicals work with which chemicals, found just there supposedly in nature.
Yeah. I thought commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafer Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafer Lager and start the conversation. Chafer Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Discussions to have in terms of this genetically modified food, especially when it comes to food, is one of the impact of the product on the body.
Mm.
Yeah, because that's also something that one has to know. Because if you just start, throwing it out there because you want to solve the food security discussion, the health issues that are going to come out of it, will make the Ministry of Health, will give the Ministry of Health a headache. So you have to, you basically have to look at it from a wider angle. What are the environmental impact? What are the intellectual property, laws that are coming with these different products that are genetically modified that you have to know about? Who is making them? What are the consequences of contravening all these intellectual, property laws? Because if it's genetically modified, someone spent a lot of money and expertise on that product for it to behave the way that it does. That means chances are very high it's not going to be given out free. And it's like you being found to, using someone's logo on your product.
Yeah.
If you did not get all the right authorizations from the owner from the owner of the logo, they can sue you. Well, the same basically applies to a genetically modified product. So, but genetically modified basically means you edited the thing, and gene editing is not cheap. Whether it's a technological hardware involved in the whole experiments or the whole thing, or the expertise, this is done by doctors in their fields, specialists. And I imagine they don't come cheap. So the two things now to put in mind is one, do you want to adopt it or not? if you are going to adapt it, what regulations do you have in do you have to put in place, which is where the Biosafety Act now comes in, comes into being, and anything that you are adopting, and from listening to Paul Mungai here, one thing I picked up is that it's like we are caught in between a rock and a hard place. We have food security discussion that we really have to to ramp up because we want to feed people, and genetic modification sort of like makes that easier. And now we're caught in between a rock and a hard place. Do we farm natural in a semi-arid country, and take forever? Take forever, if not never, to sort out the food, food security discussion, which makes that discussion resemble the organic versus inorganic fertilizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can farm using organic fertilizer, but that is, that's going to take forever. And you don't have a very long rainy season. That's one thing.
Mm.
Or you could ramp things up by using inorganic fertilizer, which we use a lot on a commercial level. But then, what's one thing that we have observed so far? Well, the fallout of using inorganic fertilizer, it helps us realize the food, the food security goal. But it also creates a lot of problem for the Ministry of Environment because of the environmental impact of inorganic fertilizers on the overall environment. But the same basically is most likely going to be to be observed or will be observed if genetically modified products are not well regulated.
No.
Because yes, you'll plant crops that are resilient to the environment, maybe even the best in terms of growth and agricultural output for for our environment, and you may even solve the food security discussion, but if the health issues are not well studied, you will end up with a population that is suffering from all kinds of health issues. And the Ministry of Health will be like, yes, Ministry of Agriculture, you solved your problem of feeding Namibians. But now I have to deal with all the health fallout.
Yeah.
The more we go through these reports, the more I don't want to be in public office.
No.
The headaches are just endless.
We heard Eagle FM dissecting those reports.
Jeez.
Solve
hunger, and if you are not careful, you might
create extra work for someone.
Yes. I know it.
Hey, Namibia. Yeah, we're the best country, man. That's
we never really solved a problem in there.
We just know how to make more work for no reason. So, yeah.
So, by using inorganic fertilizer, the Ministry of Agriculture is solving a food security problem by creating an environmental disaster for the Ministry of Environment.
Alongside a health issue for Ministry of Health.
Yeah, exactly. It's also another health issue that comes along with that.
Yeah.
So, GMO.
Okay, we're not saying that they have created such a scenario, guys. We're just laughing at the possibility of such a scenario popping up.
Yep.
Yeah. We're not saying it yet. Even though there is the Auditor General's report, which you can access and a read through in terms of whether or not the former Ministry of Agriculture, not the one that is now fused with fisheries, whether they actually did their part in some selected SDG goals. But even then, it's still a... Oh, that thing you just did, devil's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there actually was such a position?
This what?
There actually was such a position.
Devil's advocate?
I laughed. So there was this old BBC TV show I used to watch. QI.
The thing is, you're going to give the British, credit for one thing. Yeah. When it comes to sitcoms.
Yeah. No, not sitcoms. This is literally like just a general knowledge competition. They just bring in a bunch of celebrities, but there's like two feature people always there. They're all technically, in a way, also celebrities.
Yeah.
But these are not your dumb celebrities, that just fall off a chappie's, a chappie's, a bubblegum wrapper somewhere. No, these are people that are actually, that can write and read and have garnered, knowledge.
That are experts in their field.
Yeah. So at that stage, this was still the time when Stephen Fry was still the presenter. And they were talking about certain things in terms of religion. The video that you'll find on YouTube will be QI and religion. And someone literally used the word the devil's playing devil's advocate. And then Stephen Fry, who's the presenter of the show, went like, did you know that technically the Vatican did have a position like that up to a certain point here in the 1800s of literally a legal advisor representing the devil? So if someone shows up and says, yeah, the devil made me do this, then literally they would bring this guy.
That guy would be busy every Sunday.
They would bring this guy, and this guy had to like, and it wasn't even a mock court. It was literally this guy had to, it was a conversation based upon almost close to philosophy in terms of,
I can imagine,
proving whether or not the devil actually made some people commit certain crimes. Because, you know, there is this thing also that
you stole food. That wasn't the devil. You were hungry.
Yeah. There's this thing that some people also are definitely, you know, they blame another deity or something else that they know that the laws of man will struggle to prove. And so the Catholic Church had this guy and then he shows up. Let's dissect this. Now, here's the worst thing.
Seriously?
Here's the worst part. It was a priest. The person they're bringing is a priest.
The irony.
So when this particular conversation popped up there on this game show, I was like, is he really? And Stephen Fry really makes, he will tell you the fascination of the fact by laughing. And he'll say, this really happened. And if you think to yourself 200 years back, what was the level of education back then for people? What was the level of exposure to information that people had back then? So obviously, you know, organizations back then, like the Catholic Church, literally had to respond in a different scenario. And they literally had to find things of, you know, assisting the legal realm, the realm of men, specifically, that being the laws of man, in terms of basically ensuring that someone is... Is this person cuckoos, or is this person literally, you know, sane in what they are saying? And this guy would feature in legal deliberations. Well, in my case, short and sweet, it would have just have been, this person is crazy. Send this person to an institution ASAP.
No, for a very long time, someone asked a question of, what do you think is one of the biggest series of events, or one event or series of events where men lost a lot of ancient knowledge, whether it's science, philosophy, literature, and all that? And a lot of people reference to the burning of the Church of the Library of Alexandria in Egypt. The gentleman that that made the video played devil's advocate and said, here's a one unpopular opinion. I think we lost a lot of, literature, on basically all subjects. From philosophy, science, and everything. When we were copying these documents, because at some point, these scrolls became too many to copy into the, to copy for the preservation of that particular knowledge.
Yeah.
Now, since a lot of people that were doing the copying were religious gentlemen, chances are very high they prioritized more religious documents. And everything that they did not consider important in terms of their religious affiliation, it was just left to die out.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking, like, you know what, that actually makes a lot of sense. Because, all the laws that we use today, and the one that I also find fascinating in terms of its association to religion, in terms of its roots, is property law, and a lot of it is coming out of the religious realm, a lot of people that were involved into the judgments and decision making had religious qualifications, but with time a lot of religious experts who were involved, interesting enough, in the very practice of judgment, of judging that they were entrusted with, just figured out that maybe we are not the right people for, you know, for this type of job. So they started getting people that were specialists in the field of law. So that's where you see this, that's where the two, religion and the legal fraternity basically, are split.
Yeah.
Which makes, which brings up a lot of interesting discussion around natural law and how it basically lays the foundation of every, legal piece of literature. Back to the, coming back to GMO, you have to understand that that's basically where we come, where we come from. For a very long time, diseases were associated with spiritual attacks.
Yeah.
And then science came along and did all the right experiments and realized, no, you contracted flu. No, this is not a demonic attack.
Or your personal living conditions are just too dirty or unhygienic.
Yeah, wash your hands every now and then before you eat.
It's a concern even still today, but yeah.
You have a toothache.
Go see the dentist.
Yeah, go see the dentist.
Or use just salt like water and rinse out your mouth.
Yeah.
Sterilize the environment. That did work once for my tooth.
In a lot of
and then that pain just came back like this. Yo. I remember it because it would come back like in waves.
Just in an instant.
Yeah. So I rinsed before I went to get the tooth pulled out. I rinsed my mouth with salt water.
Yeah.
You know, just a cup of water with some salt in it, table salt with it. Rinsed my mouth and then Helmut, it literally attacked that infected area.
Mm-hmm.
Subdued the pain partially for like 10-20 minutes, but when he came back, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep that night until I saw the other headache the next morning.
Being in the queue.
They had Garatura. No, we first help 20 people, and we first help babies and elderly. And then I looked around me and I counted literally 20 babies and 20 elderly.
Boy.
And I was like, I'm not going to be seen today.
Boy, I cooked. So now, one of the biggest issue that is obviously going to come out of this whole genetic modification is we are most likely going to lose a lot of natural plants from genetic modification and obviously environmental impact due to global warming itself. This is where, this is now what brings up the whole, the giant seed vault in Norway, a very interesting discussion because, boy, did these guys collect a lot of, natural seeds just for storage.
Mm.
Do they call that a doomsday bunker?
Yeah.
Which, if you ask me, if it,
And other things.
Mm-hmm. Not just seeds.
Genes also. Itzmos in Norway. Is the thing not in Norway?
Yeah, it's not in Norway.
So, but isn't it? Itzmos not just one. It's like a few of them.
No. I'm only aware of one giant one. They've got multiple of them.
Genetic samples of animals. Of everything. In the event that some or a few idiots, I call them idiots, decide to bring upon the next, nuclear apocalypse. And apparently now, according to the journalist, have you heard of Karen Howe? Mm-hmm. The journalist that wrote the book about the AI, what the AI billionaires are trying to do. So now apparently all these tech billionaires are building bunkers in New Zealand. Do you know why? They apparently went and did analysis of, in the event of a global apocalypse, which country or territory is the safest still on Earth to recover from safely.
From a problem they are causing.
That they are contributing to actively. And
interesting.
In all the analysis, they continuously came upon New Zealand being the best particular position for said particular bunkers.
Okay, here's one thing. There's a nuclear winter and the wind blows. It's very simple math.
No, but they also ran these particular supposed models, analytical models are based upon that.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it's their companies involved in, for example, with genetics, specifically with plant genetics, animal genetics as well. It's their companies in some cases that are involved.
It's their companies that are bribing politicians to be in certain positions,
yeah.
And they know that this politician is crazy. Not only do they put them in, or do they fund them to be in office,
yeah.
They also make sure he has a nuclear football with them. I mean, it's a terrible idea. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to bankers, I always think of it this way. If there is a nuclear or any type of apocalypse, I want to die in the flash. Explosion, whatever it is, because you can only imagine the chaos.
To be disintegrated like that.
You can imagine the chaos that will ensue to the survivors. You're going to wish you were dead. Have you seen The 100, the TV show?
Not just The 100. I had friends that played the video game Fallout. Fallout is literally based on the scenario that you and I are talking about.
Yeah, look, it becomes...
With the mutants.
It becomes a fight over resources.
Yeah.
And
which it is in that game.
Yeah, and when it comes to over, you know, a fight over resources, that's not, that's going to be an ugly one. A very, 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 very ugly one. And, you know, just think of a banker, for example. There's one American guy that like to say that, for these billionaires that think they can hide in their bankers, I just want to tell them one thing. First of all, you didn't build that banker. The guys that were, that you gave the construction, they know that place. They know where all the events are. So what we will do is we will just go around concreting every event.
That we find in the bush.
We'll just be looking for events and then we'll just be covering them up with concrete.
Yeah.
Because you have to understand that there are no laws regulating anything at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't care how much money you have. You don't want to create a world like that. Because you know why? In a world like that, where there is not a single commercial activities, money loses value. Your money is your value. That means your bodyguard can protect you. Your driver can drive you.
The bodyguard doesn't have a that also has family.
Yeah, the bodyguard has families.
Yeah.
You know, you think your bodyguard will just, your pilot, for example, the one who will fly you from Washington to New Zealand.
Yeah.
He has families. So you think, there's a nuclear apocalypse and he will just put you on your jetties like, say, let me quickly take you to your banker so that I can come back and die with my family. Like, you can't be that dumb. But for some reason, it's that would be the Hunger Games 2.0.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's not a world that you want to imagine. And I think... sort of like to try and understand a world like that, just look at what happens in a war zone. And you will understand just a fraction of, what you'd expect in a world where everything has been blown to smithereens and there is not enough resources and people now have to fight for everything.
Yeah.
A nuclear winter is going to impact agriculture. Impact on agriculture means lack of food. And people literally revert to our animalistic instincts to where we are literally killing each other to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a good picture. So believe me, you may want to maintain what you have now. Because it doesn't matter how much money you have. The post-apocalyptic world, it's fancy in movies. Not in real life.
I mean... When you've got to look at the discussion, obviously, of where the world wants to go, and this is also with the realm, the discussion, obviously, of the future of fuels that we looked at from the IMO, the, obviously, the global gateway and the overall green hydrogen strategy and green industries strategy and playing out in Namibia, is obviously all of this fits into an overall sustainable goal of let's maintain the earth into the future for as many generations as possible, obviously. Now, there is something primarily in this. I'm not moving away from the involvement of us humans in this particular scenario. There is something of the magnitude that the Earth also changes itself, which is also one of the particular major concerns that in many scenarios, some cases, humans don't think about every day. There are other scenarios, unfortunately, where our particular actions do actively contribute to something. But in one way, the Earth also goes and does its own weird thing. For example, just those 2 years that we were in lockdown across the whole world, basically. In many cases, much of Europe, much of North America. Funny things were happening. I don't know if you remember, Helmut, how the sheep went to go look for the people in the town in Wales. The flock of sheep ended up literally in the town. And the whole flock would walk up and down the street. And the people are recording in their houses and they're going like, look at these animals. What, are they looking for us or what? They just don't... Where do they think we are? Now, obviously, in Namibia, if you've been to northern Namibia, you would know what we're talking about because, you know, people's, you know, animals just walk everywhere. But imagine in a place where they've got strict, particular, you know, like rules around agricultural animals who enter towns and small villages in the scenario. And these animals are out here looking for you as the human in terms of asking, hey, listen, where are you guys? Why haven't we seen you guys for like months? So weird things were happening. Then there was also the scenario of like the ozone layer, the hole. It wasn't actually a hole. It's just the thinnest part, of the ozone layer, but it actually was also the part specifically that, created the most heat wherever that hole was hanging. If it was hanging over Australia, it was intense heat. If it was over South America, also intense heat. I haven't heard of it actually moving anywhere over Africa, but then the thing there's also with Africa is there's this major black hole of information over this continent.
Yeah.
Africa is a huge issue, Helmut, and now I'm gravitating back to what we as humans can do. Africa has a huge issue. It doesn't generate its own knowledge. It doesn't generate enough information about itself. And we're continuously playing a pickup game, a catch-up game. Continuously, we are always on the back foot, every time. But before we actually continue, guys, we're quickly going to take a short break, take a live read and come back and head into the last few minutes of today's program here on your number one talk radio station.
All right.
Davicha University's NQA approval for the expansion of scope. Davicha University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority NQA Council has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications, which are offered through full-time blended learning modes at our university. These are the Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Davicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, regulation of, of genetically modified organisms.
I mean, another thing that's
the biggest problem will be, look, everything that's invested in, I totally understand the investment part. It's a lot of money that goes into genetically modifying a product.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense for anyone that invested in this product to make their return on investment back.
Yeah.
But when it's taken to a predatory, nature where we see now, like we see in the US where you see a lot of farmers now being taken to court because a plant that someone's intellectual property was found in their farm. Like, what am I supposed to do? Monitor bees?
But here's the thing also. In some cases, the discussions obviously from, and this is why I actually feel sorry for, how the economies around the world are moving is that you see greater and greater leverage in terms of IP happening outside of your realm of something.
Yeah.
What do I mean by this? For example, Helmut, there's I got explained in a lovely explanation. There's a plant here. There's a tree here in Namibia.
Mm.
But it's a tree only from Australia. And then I asked my sister, how did this tree get here? So what usually happens under periods of colonialism, you've got settlers from this colonizing power who feel you know what? I'd like to change the Namibian landscape by bringing in this tree I saw in Australia. 50 years after said particular thought process comes into effect, now you literally have conservationists on the ground saying, but this tree is not indigenous to Namibia, and it grows faster and it competes quicker with the indigenous trees. Because, Hamoud, for example, if you go to Rehoboth, which is technically the only town in Namibia that has the last remaining acacia forest left, I think, in southern Africa. And that particular forest is also under threat from us humans, our activity, because people in Rehoboth make fire. They collect firewood a lot, and the first victims of said particular need for firewood is always those trees. It's an actual reality. What was the thing that my younger brother told me? He said literally the two guys that work at the nature conservation office there in Rehoboth, their only job is defending and protecting that forest.
That's it. Okay,
Can't call them for, I found a snake in my roof. They will say, if it's an acacia tree, you're not calling. I'm not picking you up. I'm not going to respond to your call.
Okay, so if I was in Rehoboth and I found a snake under my bed, I'll just tell them there's an acacia tree under my bed.
They'll probably respond, but it's just two guys. So a town the size of that, the size of that particular town.
Yeah.
For two officials doing the amount of basically protecting the environment on behalf of the government is a bit overwhelming. Now, when you include farming, the landscape, which we've been talking about the most, if you include farming in the scope, it's too much work for just two guys. These guys are just in the town.
Yeah, but this brings up the discussion for what is the alternative? Because those guys are in town to protect a forest that would be used as a source of fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now...
And one tree, fully grown tree, Hamoud, in many cases 400, 500 years old. The oldest you would get would be 800.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's one of those tree species that are, they are so ancient. They literally were there possibly when there were animals that...
Like your dinosaurs, for example.
Possibly, in some scenarios.
Now, look, the thing is, you have a local population that needs fuel. This takes us back to the discussion of alternative cooking fuels we had last year. Now, the question is, you have people that needs that have been using firewood as a source of fuel for cooking for literally millennia.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you bring in this, these initiatives of protecting this forest from the people that rely on it as a source of fuel. Mm. That brings up the question of where do you put these people's needs? Because until you solve the problem of their alternative source of fuel, cordoning off all that piece of land, it's a very old trees. You want to preserve them, but you have to understand they have to eat. That's where you now have...
And those are the responses those guys are getting on the ground.
Exactly.
They're being told, so you don't want me to eat.
Yeah, what am I going
to
do?
What do I need to warm
up
my food with?
You know, we have energy infrastructure is questionable at best in most of the rural areas, including urban areas, especially the parts of the informal settlement. So, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Well, okay, go and buy a gas canister, but, I don't have a job.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know, you didn't notice the unemployment rate is also through the roof. So that's where you end up with a conflict now between what's being implemented versus what was there.
Yeah. I mean,
again, makes public office scary for me.
Yeah, because dealing with a multitude of things. Just before we also stepped in here, I even told David, there are so many Namibians who think that becoming a president is a cake in the, a walk in the park. Is literally a dessert to your dinner. It's not easy. One day, if it's not people vilifying you on the one side, others are calling for you to be impeached, like in the US. Okay. Trump does do weird things. I cannot defend Trump. He's not my president. But if you look at the Namibian context of things, yeah. Obviously, having one of the highest offices or positions in the country is
a serious headache.
It's problematic. Let me just say it. It's just problematic. If you thought you would sleep, you will not sleep.
No, look, the irony is you have a bunch of people that are running around thinking being a president is easy. The president is entrusted with 3 million people.
Yeah.
You were entrusted with one child you ran away from. Now, you see, that's where the irony now becomes very obvious. Well, you ran away from one. You're telling me you can take care of 3 million.
Who are you referencing, Amit?
I don't want to mention any names. But the thing is, this...
Because I hear this person at the background. I know, I can see this person's going... face. I don't know this person, but I can see her face.
No, look, this is where I find, this is where we have all this... you can just use, driving, for example.
Yeah.
We have speed humps everywhere because people are terrible, reckless drivers. Now, you are reckless with your car. And you're telling me you will be responsible with running a country? I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's plausible. It's also a scenario of ultimately also understanding the scope, the length, the distance in terms of what you want the country to achieve.
Yeah.
In many cases, people, and this is one of the things that I sometimes also, it's a good idea for politicians or let me say also for presidents and their administrations, to put down things, for example, like in something like the National Development Plan,
yeah.
have a document that speaks to a strategy. But then when you go try to see whether or not people actually read the thing, if you're now like a Dwight and a Helmut, then you realize there's a major disconnect between what you guys are saying up there and what people are doing.
Exactly. It easily translates into hypocrisy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think it's just say you want to be a career politician because you want to buy an iPhone with 2 SIM cards, not because you would be better at the job.
Yeah. And even this is what makes things also a little bit weirder, is sometimes that there was at one stage also before I entered into the content creation, journalistic sense of things, was that even myself, people also thought that ministers could discipline the officials in the ministry. They can't. They cannot. They don't have that power. They don't.
We don't live in a dictatorship.
You know the best part. I tried. I don't know if it was me or someone else. One of my elder siblings debating with my younger brother. And my younger brother told him, "You can't. There's another organization." Not the minister does not have that power. Mm. There's another organization. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
And this is what makes things funny, Hamoud. Yeah. For example, a minister would not have power to discipline officials for their conduct in his or her ministry. But a minister has the power to determine the economic functions in an economy.
No, the discipline part, if you look at the speech of the, of the CEO of Palapala Bank, for example, look,
the actual couch, the couch, the CEO.
Look, in that speech.
How do you call a couch a CEO? A bank? Well, look in Afrikaans.
Look, it's Palapala Bank.
It's a bank, you know.
No, look, Palapala proved to us that not everything that has cattle is a farm. So, which is actually an excellent idea. Look, the thing is in that.
And not all couches are just made for sitting.
Nope. Some are private banks.
Good storage facilities.
Look, in that speech, one thing he said was that, one thing Ramaphosa said is, we are asking, and I'm paraphrasing here, we are asking foreigners to respect our laws. And what he's talking about immigration here.
Yeah.
To respect our laws. And then he wrapped up that particular point by saying, but we also locally here in South Africa, we first have to respect our laws first.
Yeah.
We can't just ask foreigners to respect our laws, but we are busy trembling on it ourselves.
And we ourselves are not actually living up to the same particular thing.
Because the standard, according to South African laws, is that when someone is undocumented, there are authorities in place that are supposed to hold them accountable, not mob justice.
Yeah.
Now, if you are going full mob justice on immigrants, what you are doing is you are breaking the laws that you want the immigrants to follow. It has a lot
so
of...
So you are lawless.
Exactly. You are telling an immigrant you are here, illegally, therefore you broke the law. Then instead of calling the police, maybe you are just doing, you are also breaking the very same law you want them to uphold by assaulting them.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy is It's through the roof. Clear as daylight. But
on that note, David is chasing us out, guys.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted
to end on that point.
Okay.
To say what is happening in South Africa, I think the system is becoming, I don't know, how do you call something which is beyond the rotten? Because now, looking at the current revealing, is that I think Marema is also conflicted. You know,
he's always been.
His relationship with this guy who is in court now. He's a former crime intelligence boss, General Khan.
Former police officer.
There are texts, there are WhatsApp texts, and we are going to see a lot of...
And wasn't Malema on the same parliamentary...
What's it with these people and WhatsApp? The Epstein guys, it's emails. These guys, is WhatsApp.
No, Africans, they respect WhatsApp, but I think WhatsApp lied to us also. They say...
it's come by end-to-end encrypted.
First of all, it's Meta.
Yeah.
It's the guy in charge of Facebook. Remember Cambridge Analytica?
Yeah.
You trust that guy for your security?
Never.
No. Because the only thing I don't like about it is, you know, the revelation of that from Kwanazi is it ruined viewers.
No, Kwanazi, say they have the machine to retrieve everything that you
deleted. That was Kwanazi. But here's the thing. It was the same exact ad hoc standing committee which Malema is on. That Mkonazi was giving that specific...
But Malema was protecting this guy to appear before the commission because he had a good relationship. And even they were even setting questions together to tackle the
so he's interfering. But here's the thing. Malema is obviously in parliament and he, as a parliament, they are privileges. It's that thing that you also explained specifically where parliament has certain powers.
You have these immunities.
Yeah. No, not the immunities like the basic MPs. But, for example, if something happens...
Oh, parliamentary supremacy over
in
constitutional
South Africa,
supremacy.
They have parliamentary supremacy over... And then there's always this conflicting messaging in South Africa.
That's just a flaw they had in their parliamentary statutes.
Yeah.
They have constitutional supremacy like we do.
Yeah.
It's just that that one clause that allows parliament to make a decision of whether or not a case should proceed to the court. For investigations, for further investigations. So they made it, they had a clause in the parliamentary legislations to make it look like, which works this way, that parliament has the decision to decide on whether a case should proceed for further investigation, like in case of Ramaphosa to the impeachment committee.
But I think that's the big problem.
Now when that was applied by the majority ANC a couple of years ago.
Mm.
Yeah. After a series of interpretation, they found that actually forms part of, it gives parliament power in a country that is supposedly rely on the constitution.
You know, democratic system is very interesting. In Namibia, a lot of people, they fear executive than parliament. But in South Africa, it's vice versa. Even the president is scared of parliament because power is more with parliament. Decide on the president, decide on the, how do you call this? It's called Chapter 9 institution, the prosecuting authority, all these strong agencies. You have to go through parliament.
Mm.
But in Namibia, it's the executive which has power because the president, I think power is concentrated to the top, if you have to analyze it
and
that
we
way.
And we keep pushing the boundaries on that.
Every key player. Every key player.
It's also one of the reasons why we are so centralized in our decision making. Because budgeting, you can't, have you guys ever heard of a region in Namibia having the freedom to determine their development budget and then say, hey, listen, we built a skyscraper here in the middle of Otjiwarongo.
No, get what is allocated.
No. You have to come for PowerPoint presentations like that Kenyan guys that were called in by the IMF.
Uh-huh.
Irongo, Otjiwarongo, please, what are your needs? No. We don't think you need a water park there. Please.
Yeah, all right. David's time with business and economic segment. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, your favorite radio station from Home Run. Y'all have a blessed evening and please do stay tuned for business and economic segment with David.